League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is it. The real season begins now. We have reached the conclusion of the 2022-23 NBA basketball season. The Milwaukee Bucks are the top seed in the East. They have the best record in the NBA. They took it easy the last couple games of the season after wrapping that up. A Celtics loss helped help things come together pretty quickly for the Bucks. In the end here, they were able to rest their big guys for the last two games of the season. But now comes the fun part. They do not know their postseason opponent. That is something that we will learn this week through the play-in series. They will have maybe a little bit of clarity on Tuesday. They'll eliminate one possibility, but then Wednesday and then Friday. So with the series beginning, their first round playoff series beginning Sunday. So we will see the playoffs this week. We just have a long wait. And I have a full cast of characters joining me to discuss it, kind of our year-end Bucks podcast. Across from me right now in the room where I sit is one Ben Steele. What's going on, Ben?
Is this the first four-person pod in the history of the Journal Sentinel, the long-storied history of the Journal Sentinel?
The four-person booth. Technically, maybe, but like last week, I did have a little bit of Jim interspersed with and Lori. So technically, I think that counts.
Never at the same time.
This is big.
This is history.
That's correct. On the other line, I do have, in fact, Lori Nichols. She's a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Hi, Lori.
What's up?
And I also have Jim Ozarski. He's back from vacation, back in Milwaukee, sunny, beautiful Milwaukee, getting ready for the big show. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm good. I take credit for bringing the good weather with me.
You did, in fact. The weather is really quite nice. It's a great week.
Good job.
A great week to be outside in Milwaukee, and then we'll have to go back inside for the start of the playoffs, which is fine. Weather's going to deteriorate a little bit by the end of the week, so that fits in perfectly. Again, we don't know who the Bucks are going to play. We'll talk about some of the possibilities here in a minute. We'll obviously look back at the season in general. The regular season always a sign of kind of a silly exercise. Nobody ever really remembers the regular season in the long term scheme of things, but we'll look back at some highlights. But Ben, I am going to start with you because you have been covering this team pretty closely the last couple days. The curiosity is where the Bucks are at health wise. It seems like they're in a pretty good place, but Chris Middleton did leave a game with this recurring right knee soreness. Mm-hmm. Was held out for the last two games of the season, and obviously that's a concern. You know, he's played 19 minutes a game this year. He's only played in a handful of games. It's been, I wouldn't call it a lost season. It's probably a notch above that, but it's still a situation where he has not. You know, he's not played multiple games in a row, you know, going 30 minutes a game, which is something that presumably will be demanded of him. So giving the vibe, the sense of where you think they are, the Bucks are not saying it's a crisis or anything. They're saying he's probably going to be back. But do you have any sense where this team is health-wise, specifically as it relates to Chris?
Yeah, it's tough. That situation, it was strange. It was the first play of the game. Middleton came down, took a turnaround jumper. I didn't see it. It didn't look in real time like anything happened to him, but he kind of labored around. He played 6 minutes after that, and you know, there were a couple points I was thinking in my head, he doesn't have the same burst, or you know, he got blown by a couple times on defense, he didn't have the same lift on his shot, and then he exited the game, and then as we were talking up in the press box, we looked over at the bench and you know, he wasn't there. And then a couple minutes after that, the Bucks announced that he's out with that right knee soreness, and then you know that's when the alarm bells start going off. You know, he missed 18 games earlier in the season with that, and now it's flaring up at the worst possible time for them, and just coming off the games where Grayson and Pat Connaughton had their right ankle injuries that they suffered, both kind of similar injuries. So it was like this cavalcade of injuries right at the worst possible time. For what the Bucks are saying, they're saying that you know they have this week off and they're trying to get healthy before they face whoever comes out of the play-in tournament. So we'll see. I mean, it doesn't sound like any of those guys are going to miss games, but you know, how sharp are they going to be? Are they going to need any ramp up time? It's hard to say until we actually see them on the court.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, they did get the luxury of the Celtics losing their game to the 76ers that same night. That clinched the top seed for the Bucks. They were able to then not play Chris, not play anyone for these last two games against the Memphis Grizzlies and then in Toronto, and both losses. So the Bucks finished just a game ahead of Boston, but probably could have squeezed one more out. And you know, everything comes back to Boston. Chris Middleton has been great against Boston. So I think that there's a serious concern here as you get to potentially an Eastern Conference Finals. If Chris Middleton is not at his sharpest, I think that there should be some legitimate concern that the Celtics will, in fact, beat the Bucks in seven games. Jim, with what you've seen of this team has played most of the season, though, without Chris Middleton. It bears mentioning that they are the top seed, you know, in the whole league without Chris Middleton for major chunks of the year. So if Chris Middleton is not 100%, if he's not able to start games, play 30 minutes, can this Bucks team still win an NBA title, or is Chris Middleton just kind of a necessity that you can't live without?
Yeah, I have regular season games are so different than trying to win four series against the best teams in basketball. That's not to say I think the Bucks are better prepared to manage games without him. I mean, Joe Ingles is almost literally the same size, right? I mean, he's years older. He is not the individual scorer, but at least in terms of offense, you know, he can run two-man game with Giannis and Brooke Lopez and get the ball going. Is he going to be the guy you want to hit an 18-footer to win a game? I don't know. I don't know. Look, they can win the first round without Chris, maybe without, you know, probably without Grayson. I mean, I don't know what the play-in matchup's going to be. If it's Toronto, that's going to be a pain. If it's Miami, it's going to be a pain. Atlanta has given the Bucks fits the last three seasons. So I do think they got out of the first round, but I'm hard-pressed to sit here right now, all of you, and say, yeah, they're going to win an NBA championship if Chris Middleton is not a part of it. He's their second best player, and I don't know. I feel like they can advance, but how far that goes, I really don't know. I think he's got to be some version of himself. I don't know, Laurie. Does it got to be 33 minutes, Chris? Or, like, is this a thing where, like the last time, there's this week off, there's some sort of weird ramp up in the first round, and he's like 22 minutes, Chris? I mean, to me, I still think that's better than nothing. But I don't know if they can win a title if he's not on the court.
The problem is we don't exactly know what the injury is. We don't know if it's arthritis. We don't know if he has fluid behind the kneecap. And so I saw that he was cleared, you know, that he got his MRI. Wasn't it Shams who reported that?
Yeah,
it was clear. Well, yeah. What does that mean? That means he doesn't have any torn ligaments. Yeah. But it doesn't mean, you know, like, it doesn't mean if he's got a week or two of rehabilitation in front of him, that's electric stimulation of the muscles so that he can keep the muscle strong, the quadricep muscle that supports the knee. That's really important. But while you do that, then you're not practicing as much because you really want to bring down the inflammation. So to me, the fact that this keeps popping up for Chris has got to be really frustrating. But knowing Chris, he's 31 years old. He's put his heart and soul and life into this team. I don't know if he can get another cortisone shot or if he's been getting them or if he's maxed out the number of cortisone shots or whatever. Like, if he can do something like that to get through the next 7 to 8 weeks, you kind of get the sense like, okay, this is the ultimate sense of urgency. Not this week, not the next 10 days, but after that, you know, what's his treatment? What exactly the injury is? I don't know. If you get a cortisone shot too, you've got to get that in and get it settled for a little bit before you can't like play in the next day or something. So we don't know what the injury is. So we don't know what he's dealing with. And injuries have a way of messing with a guy's head just as much as anything. It messes with your confidence. So until we get a chance to really talk to him, if he decides to talk about it at all, I don't know what kind of version of Chris Middleton we can expect, but in addition to all the things that you brought up, Jim, the thing that I like about Middleton the most, and one of the stories I want to do if he gets back, is his on-court leadership is probably one of the best on the team. What he can do on the court, what he can see, how he can direct guys, his blunt opinion on things and what he's willing to say to people, that is extremely valuable in the playoffs. So I hope we get a chance to talk to him a little bit, but I'm not expecting much, right? Like, he's not going to reveal everything. So who knows?
Jim and Lori, I'm going to volley this back to you in terms of Middleton's future with this franchise. We obviously have a lot more to talk about this season, but he's got a player option, I believe, for next year, $40 million. I don't know where he stands, if he would opt out of that and, you know, look to re-sign with the Bucks or maybe even consider elsewhere with this injury season. We've talked about this before. Going into the last playoffs, I would not have put an injury label anywhere near Chris Middleton's career. He'd been pretty healthy, but he obviously missed a good chunk of the playoffs last year. It was a pretty costly situation for the Bucks when they lost to the Celtics. And now he's had what, you know, again, was an injury-riddled year, I think is safe to say. So I don't know what happens next, you know? He's an expensive player, and not that you wouldn't want him on the team. Of course the Bucks would, but if there were a way to not have to pay that much money, they would maybe be on board for that. Then again, the ball's in Middleton's court, initially at least. So Jim, I don't know. If it's probably too early a little bit to talk about this, but is this Chris Middleton's last go-round with the Milwaukee Bucks, do you think?
It's definitely not too early to talk about it, because there are a finite number of games left. And generally speaking, for fans that are listening, players, like, the idea of a player option, like, that just adds a year and some money to the contract they signed. It makes everybody look good. But no player ever wants to pick up the option. For instance, the last two options I can recall being picked up were Kyrie Irving and Russell Westbrook. And Kyrie Irving and Russell Westbrook had no one who wanted them. Like, that's the whole point of the option, is you don't pick it up. It's essentially the safety net of all safety nets. Now, that's the question. Is Chris Middleton in that boat? Is, you know, playing 33 out of 80 games? Man, it is a great question. It's one that I think Bucks fans can remember from years and years ago. Of, do you pay this person max dollars? That's not even really a question anymore. Like, you just have to pay what it costs, right? And for the Bucks, it would be very expensive. Yes. It's really, you're right, JR. I don't know Chris's thinking there. Like, when we've sat and talked about this, he's, you know, made it clear, well, if the Bucks want to give me what I want, I'll be here. Which makes me think he wants, you know, one last huge deal. But let's be real. He played 33 games with this, you know, the knee is definitely the biggest issue after the postseason wrist surgery. Look, this is the right knee that bothered him out of college. It had him drop into the second round. It hasn't flared up in a decade, you know, credit to him and the Bucks staff, but it did. At 31, as Lori said. So what does he weigh? Does he weigh the 11 games at the end of the year where he played 30 minutes a game and averaged 20 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, shot 47%, 90%? Like, he was Chris Middleton in those 11 games once he returned to the starting lineup. Is 11 games enough for him to decline his option? And the Bucks to extend to whatever? Is it for John Hammond and Orlando Magic to give him $180 million? Or is missing 49 games enough for Chris to say, you know what, maybe I should pick up the option and try this again next year? It's a great question, JR. And it's only a one that's going to be more loudly asked as the Bucks get closer to their season ending.
Any thoughts on that, Lori?
Just that I think we're going to learn more about Bucks general manager John Horst than anyone else when this comes up. And John Horst is a young GM who really values analytics. Several years ago, I got to interview him one-on-one with him and the former analytics guy with the Bucks, and they looked at how players were trending, right? And so will he you know, be loyal to the numbers and whatever he thinks is trending with Chris Middleton, or will he be loyal to sentimentality and the cornerstone of the foundation is the cornerstone foundation of the Bucks is Giannis and Chris, and has been for a decade. So will he try to, you know, not break up the band and keep them together? Because we'll know Chris Middleton won't, he's not a complainer. He's a very smart guy. He's not going to go to the press and complain about a contract offering that he might think is beneath him, but we'll find out at some point. Those numbers will get released. So we're going to learn a lot about this GM in the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Of course, again, bears mentioning one more time, the Bucks did secure the number one seed in the, you know, in all of the NBA and didn't have Chris Middleton for most of the season. So it stands to reason they could find a path to move on. I mean, they would need more personnel. Middleton is not the only decision they're going to have to deal with this offseason, but they could theoretically, as long as Giannis is on this team, find a way. So super interesting call coming up. Ben, I want to move back to kind of just the fact that this team locked up the number one seed. They are, they did what they had to do. I'd be curious to know what your favorite highlight was from the Memphis and Toronto games that you followed, because those things, that was not actual Bucks basketball. I don't know how it could be anything other than the Thanasis hammer against the Raptors.
What about Lindell Wigginton?
Oh my gosh, Lindell Wigginton. We should absolutely carve out in the middle of a playoff conversation some time to talk about the great Lindell Wigginton. Oh my goodness, what a performance.
I think he got 20 shots up that game.
I know, what was it, 25 points? Isaiah Thomas, I think, was the last guy to put up similar numbers in his first career start. Just wild, incredible stuff to Lindell Wigginton, who wasn't even on a two-way contract until the Bucks parted ways with Sandro Mamushkevili. You know how to say it better than I do. Mama, I'm missing a syllable if I say that. Mamushkevili?
Yeah.
Help me out.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Mamukelishvili.
See, I knew there was another syllable in there. Mamukelishvili. He finished his season with the Spurs. But the one seed, it certainly mattered, I think, to Bucks fans, and it seems to have mattered to the Bucks this season, so that they could have every advantage possible. Give me your thoughts, though, just on where, if this season ends shy of the NBA Finals, if they do, in fact, get beaten by Boston, of course that means it's going to be a little bit of a disappointment. There's no way around that. But is it devastating? Like, is it one of the greatest missed opportunities in Bucks history? Is it just, hey, those are two really good teams, and it happened to be that the Celtics got the better of them for the second year in a row? What is your thinking with this Bucks team that you've seen quite a bit this year? Is it just a massive disappointment if this team doesn't get as far as the finals or even win the finals? Or would you say, I mean, Boston's just that good? Like, you can't say for certain that that's where the Bucks are headed.
Well, I think this is definitely the window, and the window is, as we've talked about the last couple of minutes, with all these decisions that have to get made in the summer and next summer. I mean, the window is closing, and they lost the big opportunity last year when Chris got hurt, and the window is always smaller than you think in with any championship team. So I think you see that with the players, especially the last couple of weeks, where they talked about openly wanting to get that number one seed. They feel that this is the year, this is the time, and pushing for that number one seed, which is important because, as we saw last year, getting their doors blown off at Boston in Game 7 of that series last year, getting that Game 7 at home is clearly important to the players. But yeah, this is, I think anything short of the NBA Finals would be disappointing to anybody, just because this is it. I mean, this is the last run probably with these guys if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I've said this before that I don't think people even realize how the window could close here. You know, with no Middleton, no Lopez, like there is a real possibility that this team is very, very different next year. And that's I don't think a reality anyone has really settled in on yet, because why bother? They're one of the best teams in the NBA. They've got a big playoff run presumably ahead of them. But it feels like the end might come very suddenly for a lot of people if, in fact, this thing goes south. I do want to talk about a few more things, including the teams that they could potentially play. But Ben, before we move on from that, you got a chance to talk to the one and only Ray Allen, the greatest number 34 in Bucks history.
By universal acclaim, yeah. By, I think everyone says it.
Everyone says so. Ray Allen was in the house for was that the Grizzlies game, or was that the game before it against the Bulls? I don't even know.
No, that was the Grizzlies game.
Grizzlies game, okay. Talked a little bit about hanging that jersey up in the rafters, and we've talked a little bit about the jerseys hanging in the rafters before. Brook Lopez, should the number 11 go up there? This team has a history of retiring a lot of guys' numbers, and Ray Allen should probably be up there too. There's two problems. One is that they, you know, retired a lot of guys early on in their history and probably wanted to slow it down a little bit. Number two, you know, maybe Michael Redd and a couple others also have a very good case. And number three, 34 is kind of taken. If you're really concerned about the number itself, you know, you'd be retiring the jersey and not the number. And is that different from all the retired numbers? I don't know. But give me just some reaction from your chat with Ray Allen. It was 90s night. It was a good time for people like me. Should there be something done for Ray Allen with this organization?
Yeah, that 2001 team, that was such a ray of light. I guess you can call it a ray of light, you know, with Ray Allen and that team. You know, was the only bright spot there for a couple decades span. You look at his numbers, man, it's kind of a tweener. You know, he only played seven seasons here in Milwaukee. Three-time All-Star. I think he made an All-NBA team one of those years. Won a three-point shooting championship, right? People forget that. The only one, right, in franchise history. I don't know if you need to honor that, but it's on his resume. But he was certainly, during that time, I mean, that was a great time for Bucks fans, those purple jerseys that they busted out during the 90s night. That meant a lot to that generation of fans. So I definitely think there's something. Jersey retirement, probably going too far, but if there's something else that they could honor him with, that it would certainly be appropriate.
Yeah. What do you guys think, Lori and Jim? Lori, what about you? Do you have any strong feelings for Ray Allen?
Yeah, I think it's a good point to debate. You know, he's second all time in three-pointers made in the NBA behind Steph Curry. And he was averaging like 7.7 with the Bucks during his last big year here. JR, you want to retire everybody's number. There's not going to be any numbers
I mean,
left,
if we're being fully honest, and I feel like there's no way to say this without sounding like you're throwing shade, I want to unretire a few, and then we can restart the conversation. That's truly what I want to
do,
but I digress.
Tell me who.
No, there will be no naming names on this podcast. Oh. the Bucks fans, they know. The Bucks fans know. That's all I'll say. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's something to debate, for sure.
What about you, Jim? Any thoughts?
We've had these conversations, and it's been fun. I will say this, this was an open locker room, so I'm not divulging anything here, but Drew Holiday, always a source of thought and sharp, comments, interestingly noted that the two best players on the team are wearing the numbers that should have been retired before in 22 and 34. So I'll just leave it at that. I on one hand, I think Drew is maybe giving some needling, but on the other hand, Drew, I think, knows who Michael Redd and Ray Allen are. And he probably, there was a little bit of truth to that as well. So, what's done is done in that regard. It was cool to see Ray Allen back. I mean, Lori and I were at a game. Tim Thomas was kind of wandering through the halls and, I think there was some rumors of some other members of the original Big Three, maybe them trying to get them back if possible. I don't know. I'm one of those guys. I like alumni. I like that idea. I don't know what it is about it that's fun. I think at this point, you know, the Bucks just. Yeah, the too many numbers are already up, and current numbers are already in use. So Ray Allen probably should be honored in some other way, along with some other players.
Ray Allen still looks like he could put up a few shots in an NBA game. He's in incredible shape.
I believe it. Shouts to both Michael Redd and Chris Middleton, who are, I could look this up to be sure, but probably the two best second-round draft picks in NBA history, or not NBA history, geez, I'm going way overboard now, in Milwaukee Bucks history, and as Nikola Jokic zooms in on a third
Nikola
MVP.
Jokic, just had chills down his spine for some reason.
Yeah, we're going with Bucks history, and both of them were number 22, you know, maybe highlighting that a little bit. I'm sure that has nothing to do with it, but... those are some good players, and it would be nice. I think Lori kind of hit on it. Like, Ray Allen's career is much bigger than his time with the Bucks, so it probably, you know, it's a little ceremonial.
We could get into this because that's the whole Bob Lanier thing.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we talked about that. Love Bob Lanier, but like Bob Lanier's number should not be retired with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Here, the truth comes out.
Love him. He's a NBA Hall of Famer, pro basketball Hall of Famer, tremendous player, and was good with the Bucks. And that's exactly what he was good with the Bucks, at least in the historical context. Whatever. Sorry. Sorry to the relatives of Bob Lanier. I mean, great, great, great player. Huge feat. Awesome. And just shouldn't have his number retired here. That's all. Okay. Let's talk about go back to this team. The four teams that the Bucks could face in the first round of the playoffs have been settled. They've been settled, actually not settled for a while, but it seems like we're headed in this direction where it was either going to be the Heat, the Hawks, the Raptors, or the Bulls. But to be honest with you guys, don't think it's going to be the Bulls. They're not a good team. So we talked briefly about those other three teams. The Heat do scare me, and that might just be me looking back a couple years, you know, over the last couple years. They got the same dudes that they've had with really good teams. It's easy to forget. This was the number one seed in the East last year, and they still have Jimmy Butler, and they still have Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, and a couple guys that, you know, are names that are kind of scary. But they haven't shot the ball well this year. They just have not been able to put it together. And they're only the seventh seed. And I could definitely see a scenario where the Hawks win that play-in game on Tuesday night and wind up, and the Heat end up winning the follow-up game on Friday night. And then the Heat are the team that the Bucks have to face. I think that's a tough 1-8 matchup. I don't necessarily think the Bucks are in danger of losing that series, but I could see it being a push for sure in the early going. So I'm going to start with, we'll start locally here. I'm going to start with Ben. If I should be afraid of the Heat, or if that's just, you know, just the old vibes coming into play here, and that this version of the Miami Heat is not a team that really should threaten the Milwaukee Bucks. And then if not the Heat, which team, and we talked about this last week, but we'll expound, which team should really be concerning as a 1-8 matchup?
Yeah, I don't think realistically any of those teams are really going to give much of a challenge to the Bucks. I mean, the Heat, I think that's just like the last vestiges of those teams from a couple years ago that are still linger in people's minds. Not the same team if you look at the record and just the way they perform this year. It's just not the same team. Atlanta, if they should somehow fall to that spot, Jim mentioned this earlier, they're a team that's kind of built to give the Bucks a little bit of fits, just with Trae Young against, you know, the drop coverage that Brook Lopez likes to play, and they got a few guys with length that they can throw at Giannis. But again, like any of these teams, beyond dropping one game, I don't see much of any of those teams giving the Bucks any kind of major problems.
I just feel like, man, the Heat, you know, it's the role players who are not as good as they've been in last year. You know, like Max Strus and Duncan Robinson has kind of fallen out of the rotation. Like they're the dudes are the same. That's I guess what worries me. Like any one of those kind of role players could catch fire. We've seen that time and time again in playoff series. Like, I don't know. Lori, what do you think? Do you have any sense on these four teams, which one might be the greatest threat to the Milwaukee Bucks?
Nothing more than what Ben said. The only key for the Bucks is to get out of the first round in four games and healthy. Mm-hmm. I was going to pull out notes and talk and old game clippings. Nah, not even worried about
fair enough.
The first round. Sorry.
Fair enough. No, and Jim has said that before too, that these teams, even if they offer a little bit of resistance, they're just not a threat. So Jim, any thoughts now that we've reached this point of the season?
No, I mean, it's Lori's point. It is getting healthy. We remember last year, they did not end the first round healthy. Mm-hmm. It's more of a thorn in the side for the Bucks. Like if they play Toronto, that's just a pain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Toronto, like it's just going to be a pain in the butt. I think Atlanta's in the same boat just because of they have enough length and defensive discipline to give Giannis just enough of a headache. I don't think the Heat have anything for the Bucks. The Bulls don't have any. I mean, those could be sweeps. Or the quote unquote gentleman sweep. I just think Toronto and Atlanta, to Lori's point of you want to end it quickly. Like Toronto and Atlanta, I think can just make it. You know, Toronto.
Is Atlanta still running up and down the court like crazy?
It's. In Atlanta, too, remember, Quinn Snyder's the head coach now. So that's a different wrinkle to that.
Versus apprentice matchup there.
Yeah. So, you know, they can't control who they're going to play. They are going to win the first round, whether Chris Middleton plays or not. But I could see a scenario where it's just annoying with going five games, or maybe there's that Bucks are winning by 15 with 4 minutes left, and then something dumb happens, and they go, Toronto Atlanta reek of that for me, I guess, for whatever reason. So, but they're gonna win. They're gonna win the first round, JR. That's we're past that. They're too good to be worrying about like actually losing a, you know, having a historic playoff upset, as long as, you know, mm-hmm. Drew and Giannis and Brooke are all available.
I don't know. The Dallas Mavericks probably thought they were better than Golden State that one year with Don Nelson. Everything went wrong. Who did the Denver Nuggets beat? Was that the Sonics?
Yeah. Dikembe Mutombo.
That was a five-game series. It almost sounds
like that's not the same. Era. That's not the same. I agree with you. Okay. Let's, and obviously we'll talk more about a possible Cleveland matchup in the second round, Cleveland or the Knicks in the second round, which stands to be obviously a much more, much tougher test than what they're going to see in the first round. But all right, let's look back at this regular season, spending some time looking at the, again, moments everyone's going to remember in the grand scheme of 2022-2023. We'll start with like best moment, I think. Coolest moment. It can be an on-court thing, an off-court thing. There's a lot. I mean, I think the latter game is something that people are going to remember at the beginning of the season. Like, I wouldn't call that a cool moment or a best moment, but certainly something from the early part of the year that people are actually going to remember before the calendar turned. But I don't know. I don't have a really good answer other than that as something that truly, truly sticks out. There have been some highlights here and there. So I'm gonna throw it to Jim first, because I know you've been at probably the most games of any of us here. So you have a little bit broader. Broader batch of memories there rolling around. Do you have a coolest moment or best moment of this regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to kind of go chalk, I guess, if you will.
Nice.
Giannis's 55 points without hitting a three against Washington January 3rd. 60% shooting. He made 15 of his 16 free throws, flirted with a triple-double. But the fact that he was sort of, you were sort of on the edge of your seat with breaking Michael Redd's record. It that trumps Drew Holiday's flirtation with Michael Redd 51. That was pretty amazing as well, with Giannis's triple double in Indiana later in the year. But I don't know, 55 without hitting a three is pretty remarkable. And we kind of get used to Giannis doing Giannis things, and he did a lot of those things this year, particularly in terms of scoring the basketball. But for me, just to watch that happen from start to finish, to see his teammates react to that in the locker room, I don't know, that in terms of you talking about a cool moment, I when you wrap it all together, to me, that was probably the coolest I was a part of, or at least around.
Lori, do you have any thoughts on this topic?
Well, I thought it was cool that even just a couple of games ago, Jay Crowder and Bobby Portis were like laughing with each other and joking around. And that's, I mean, those two weren't necessarily best friends when before. And now that they're good teammates, I think that's a good sign. I will think of, the dunks by Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton and all the jokes in the locker room about athleticism and stuff like that, which is a total joke. Of course, they're all great athletes. And any game that Drew Holiday had to come through with Giannis being out, Drew, that when Giannis hasn't played a couple of games this year, it's changed the way Drew Holiday plays and his assertiveness, high scoring, and the fact that, after a couple of these games, I asked him, what's the stat you look at first when you get the box score at the end of the game? And he's like, I look at my turnovers. So that's such an old school point guard answer. I just love it. So little stuff like that. But the best is yet to come. Those cool moments haven't even happened yet.
For sure.
It's coming.
Yeah. Loved Jay Crowder celebrating with a guy who made the half-court shot to win 10,000.
I was actually going to mention that.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Take it away.
Yeah. For those who didn't see it, two games in a row, actually, a fan at halftime hit a half-court shot to win $10,000. And the last game against the Grizzlies, I think Jay Crowder was just off to the side of during the timeout. If he was just
chilling.
waiting to get in. And when the guy hit the shot, I mean, it was like a teammate hit a championship or NCAA tournament game winner, at the buzzer. And Jay Crowder's jumping on him and throwing him to the ground. And I'm sure it must have been crazy for that guy who hit the shot. Like, who's this massive human being that's jumping on my back right now? But yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. I was going to mention.
It's like he had a whole entourage of people that were suddenly like celebrating with him. And then you know, you're watching the shot, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, Jake Crowder is in there with his jersey on, celebrating with this guy.
This sweaty man on.
Really, really funny. Really, really funny. Like I said, there's some moments you forget. There's a pretty sensational dunk against Indiana in January. It was Grayson Allen who fed Giannis in transition, and the guy just took off from an absurd distance and had this like twisting dunk on his way to scoring 41 points. Something that I'd forgotten. Tim Hardaway's business decision was actually this season. I felt like that's the previous year, but that's again in November, where Hardaway, of course, is the player that Giannis famously dunked over when he just jumped over him in at Madison Square Garden in New York. This time around, Tim Hardaway just casually stepped out of the way, allowing Giannis to have a pretty impressive flush. So there are moments like that. Drew scoring 51 was really, really cool.
Grayson Allen had a dunk of his own.
Yes, Grayson Allen with a throwdown as well. Which game was that?
That was Pacers game.
That was
right?
The same Pacers
game. So that was the fun part of that. Drew scores 51.
He only scored.
Giannis has a crazy triple-double, and yet all anyone talked about in the locker room was Grayson's dunk on Jordan Warren.
And that was his only basket of the game, right?
Yeah.
That's wild. That's incredible. Giannis has had some really good chase down blocks.
Oh yeah.
So there have been some moments on the court and obviously you know, some fun stuff off of it. I really like that story Jim wrote at the beginning of the year about Bobby Portis. You know, like really committing to Milwaukee and the sort of love affair between Portis and the city. You know, we haven't seen maybe as much of that this year, but Portis has continued to get a lot better and. You know, I keep bringing up, he's one of the few players on this team that's actually younger than Giannis, you know, so there is a lot of room for him to grow, and he has grown and will be in the conversation for sixth man of the year. All right, MVP non-Giannis division. We know Giannis is one of the top players in all of the world, safe to say. We know he's the MVP. I asked this question thinking, well, there's an obvious answer, and then I thought about it like, I don't know what the obvious answer is for this season. I mean, Chris Middleton would be the obvious answer any other season. So Ben, I'll start with you. Who's the guy that you say has to be MVP non-Giannis division?
I'm casting my ballot for Brooke Lopez.
Interesting. Tell me more.
I was looking at his points per game. It's the highest in his career of a non-Brooklyn / I think he was there in New Jersey. Non-net season for Brooke Lopez. As everyone likes to bring up, you know, he is the career-leading scorer in Nets history. I think Wes Matthews brought that up the other day. But this was a guy, 35 years old, right? And he's coming off back surgery last season. I thought that might be, you know, the end of his career, or at least like the downside of his career. But just watching him play and watching him run, I mean, he looks like 13 years younger, like coming out of Stanford, you know, just the way he runs. And especially these last couple of weeks where guys have been in and out of the lineup, he's been, you know, provided a lot of scoring punch. And he's also, you know, has the strongest case to be defensive player of the year as much as anybody in the league. So those are the reasons why I voted for him.
Love it. We talked last week about how really, if you wanted to boil the regular season down to a theme, it's the contributions of Brooke, that he is, in fact, a front runner, if not the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. He could be the oldest player to win it. That's one of my favorite facts. Mm. And coming off that back surgery, there's no way anybody could have expected him to contribute, to be available as much as he has, let alone contribute as much as he has. And throw in the fact that he's an awesome personality and, you know, his future in Milwaukee is also very much interesting to discuss, and surely we can still do that. Jim, do you also go with Brooke Lopez, or do you have an alternative?
Brooke Lopez would be my pick. Lori's note on the previous conversation of how Drew Holiday's game changed this year without Chris and Giannis in the lineups, either together, it can't be ignored. I think Drew arguably put together a career season, just like Brooke Lopez came very close. But I think how good Brooke was, I don't know. It's one of those where I think even Drew would agree with us on this one. He did say, I think it was the game in Sacramento where he was ejected for standing up for Giannis. Which also might fit into the coolest moment thing. That was kind of interesting. Yeah. Or weirdest.
For sure.
With Lattergate. But Drew even kind of walked off saying Brooks the MVP of the team, you know. So Giannis obviously has expressed his love and appreciation for him. So I'm going to go with Brooke for all of those reasons as well.
All right, Lori, 3 for 3 on Brooke. What do you say?
Yeah, it's got it. I mean, I was going to go with different angles, like Bobby Portis is amazing, sixth man of the year. And I was even going to say Budenholzer, Mike Budenholzer as coach for different reasons. But if we're staying true to the definition of this weird award that you just created.
Yes.
The non-Giannis MVP. It's got to be Brooke. It's got to be Brooke. Yeah.
I think that's fair. Honestly, when I said I thought there was an obvious answer, I thought Drew was the obvious answer. You know, like his defense is so special. He has upped his game offensively, like you guys have said. I think both of them are pretty indispensable. I do think there's a way this team can win the title if Brooke suddenly disappeared. I do not feel that way about Drew. I agree with you. You can't lose either one of them. They're both essential. Brooke is obviously essential to what they do defensively. It's interesting. Brooke Lopez, congratulations. You've won an award. We will see if you also win Defensive Player of the Year from the people who have more power than we do. Should be the case, although I guess I thought that was maybe more airtight than I've seen rumblings. Jaren Jackson still in the mix, other names. It's a tough award to forecast because people have different definitions of what makes a great Defensive Player of the Year. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I was going to do best game, but I feel like these games all run together. I mean, that you could wrap them up in the biggest moment. Do you have one, Lori? Do you have best game?
Yeah, I prepared.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
yep. Let's do it then. I do not want to throw that stuff out. So give me your best game of the year.
And first of all, let's erase all that negative talk about possible injuries and winning a championship without that. Let's pull that back in the universe.
All right.
We retract that.
It's gone.
We redact that.
Okay. I will edit it out.
Here's my big.
I'm not gonna.
All right. You're gonna be surprised. I was all prepared for this answer.
Then let's do it. Best game.
It's not the best game. Again, but it was the game that made me think this team is going to win the title. And it was all the way back on November 9th. The Bucks lost at Atlanta and played at Oklahoma City. And they won in double overtime. And here's why I think that was such a key game. The starting lineup was Bobby Portis, Marjon Beauchamp, Brooke Lopez, Javon Carter, and Grayson Allen. And they endured two overtimes to win that game. And Brooke had incredible blocks. And I think we have to stop calling them the big three. Like all of our headlines say, oh, the Bucks win without the big three. It's got to be the big four because Brooke, we got to stop slighting him. But anyway, that was the game that I just saw so much, you know, grit from the Bucks. Of course, you have to have talent. You have to have coaching. You have to have luck. You have to have all that. But at this level, when you get into the playoffs with as ugly as things are going to get, you have to dig deep for something extra, all the intangibles. And even, you know, Grayson Allen, I think, had a big miss, but he came back with a couple of defensive plays. And we saw that time and time again. And to me, all the way back on November 9th, I thought this is the game that this showed this team that they, number one, have depth. And they have the depth and the grit to pull out a win. And those little wins led to this number one seed. And so to me, that was a big game.
I like it. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, Lori actually stole mine because that's...
Really?
I mean, I was there Come for on. That one. That was insane.
No.
It's a great game. I'm just surprised. Carter. There's so many games to choose from.
Yeah, that was the Javon Carter becomes an NBA meme with the I woke up. Like
when yes, totally.
When I woke up,
that's right.
That also, JR. I mean, because I know you compile some of our lists at the end of the year.
Best quote? Is that what you're saying?
Nope, we lose him.
We lost him.
Explain this. So in Indiana, after Drew Holiday scores 51, he goes in the locker room, and I think someone asked him, you know, did you know you're going to have it going? And he says, when I woke up. And of course, all of the other Bucks around him fall into laughter. The road writers think this is a great quote. But of course, all of us know what that's in reference to. So then Javon Carter is explaining to Jay Crowder and Goran Dragic, who were not here for that, what that was. And then showing how Kevin Durant used it in a post game, and like 3-4 other NBA players this year have used "when I woke up" as like the response to their big game. And how just like, I guess, NBA viral that went. So there's that. So I'm going to go with the overtime game in Toronto on January 4th. Bucks win 104-101. That's Giannis finds Grayson Allen in the corner as time's winding down for a kind of crazy assist. That was the Giannis 30-point, 21-rebound, 10-assist triple-double.
Casual.
Crazy stat line. He also had 12 turnovers, so he had the weird quadruple-double, but we won't talk about that. again, going to Lori's broader point, though, of the grit of this team, and that was, again, back in early January. That was a home and road back-to-back. January 3rd, guess what? What did we just talk about? Giannis scoring 55 in the triple. Like, that was the next day. And Giannis played. Now, granted, then Giannis had to take some days off after that. But it, yeah, I think that all showed, again, that, you know, the trust in Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen stepping up in a huge moment. But also early in the year, it was very clear that this team had a real mission and drive to win these games. And then on a broader level, Giannis trying to push his body to play as many games as possible and having just an incredible season overall.
All right, Ben, do you got one of these?
Yeah, I chose March 13th at Sacramento. We already mentioned the Brook Lopez fight. So for Booby, who is this Ben Steele guy? My main job is covering Marquette. So the first couple weeks of March, that's the busiest time for me. But once Marquette season was done, so I wasn't watching those Bucks games. Obviously, I had a lot on my plate. But after the Marquette season was over, I went back and saw the Bucks did those first couple weeks of March. And that, I think that was the first game that I rewatched, and it was a wildly entertaining game. Giannis had 46 points. Jim, was that the game? Did he come back after he missed like six games with the hand thing?
Yeah.
And Chris Middleton looked like Chris Middleton in that game. That was one of his best games of the year. Brook Lopez had, you know, a lot of blocks, scored 20 plus points, and had the fight at the end. I'm watching this to catch up on the Bucks, and I'm like, oh yep, Giannis is still good. Bucks are still good. Bucks are still NBA contenders. So that's what I put down.
All right, well, for me, I do have a different game. How about February 2nd or 3rd? I think it's the 3rd. Against the Clippers. This is in the midst of their 16-game winning streak. It's pretty easy to forget that the Bucks won 16 straight games this year. It's not a club record or anything, but they were on an absolute a tear through January. Did not lose a game in February. This was only the 6th straight game that was against the Clippers. They won 106-105. They rallied from a 21-point deficit. They held the Clippers to 18 points in the fourth quarter. Giannis scored 20 of his 54 points in the fourth quarter. It was his third 50-point game of the year. He said afterwards he's going to Culver's, that he trusts Culver's, Chick-fil-A. It's tough. It's a tough scene for Chick-fil-A. Of course, the famous drive-through moment after Game 6 of the NBA Finals in 2021. But also had just 18 rebounds for fun. Nothing out of the ordinary other than a really hotly contested game. Kawhi Leonard had a shot at the buzzer that did not go in, so they win on the defensive end, which I think is appropriate. And that's the middle of what really was their best streak of basketball this season. So, that was a nice time, too. Again, all of these memories will get folded into kind of one big hodgepodge, and the only thing people will remember is the playoffs. But that's good. I'm glad we all brought a game to the table. So I've got one more, and that's biggest surprise. Now, we maybe talked a lot about Brook Lopez. I think probably could safely say Brook Lopez is the biggest surprise of the year. The fact that he's healthy, the fact that he contributed as much as he did. But we could spend more time talking about that. But if there's anything else, I'm happy to entertain it. How about we start with Jim? Do you have a surprise that ranks up there for this 2022-23 basketball season?
I'd say the change in offense from the, you know, November, October, November, December. We'll write about this a little bit in this coming week. Is this a surprise? Like, the Bucks were not good offensively for several months. And then Mike Budenholzer basically was like, all right, just start running and shooting threes and just go do the thing. And basically from the end of that Miami back-to-back where they got really trounced by the Heat down in Florida, I mean, they were, if not the best offensive team, like one of the best in terms of points per game. And, I mean, we're talking, and this is like the whole thing. This isn't just Giannis. This is Javon Carter hitting six threes a game. This is Bobby Portis and like Brooke folding into this as a post player more than a like, is that a surprise? I guess like you want coaches and teams to make adjustments and change. But I think the level to like the stark contrast in the numbers and the way it looked and the way they beat teams was so like, I mean, it's night and day. So I guess I'll say that's a surprise because of just how different it looked after that moment, in mid January, you know, early to mid January. And that encompasses sort of all of that. So to me, that would be the biggest surprise is just how they went from one to another, just like that, and just really just put it two teams offensively the last several months of the season.
How about it, Lori? You got any surprise of the year?
I am surprised that we're still learning things about Giannis Antetokounmpo, who should win the MVP this year. And I say that because he hurt that wrist so much at Chicago, and then he ends up coming back and playing on that injured wrist. And I thought I saw him on April 4th on the road have ice wrapped up on that wrist. I think that's the first time I've seen that. And I'll tell you, you know, one of my obsessions with covering the NBA, and maybe I should let this go. I just can't seem to let it go. Back in the day when Jason Kidd was the coach, we, you know, the media would be called to, you know, you're going to cover practice. You can open up the practice at 1:30 p.m. and that's when you can talk to guys. And we would be there till 2:30 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. It just seemed like when we would hear, you know, on the other side of the closed doors, we would hear screaming and yelling and, you know, all the practice work sounds that you expect to hear. And I would think, my God, Coach Kidd is killing these guys. They're just working and working and working to death. So I've always been kind of obsessed with minutes and how much you can demand from a player, whether they're 18 years old or 38 years old. And the other surprise to me is Giannis Antetokounmpo, total minutes has been 2,024 minutes this year, which is the least amount since his rookie year. And I'm not counting the pandemic season, which was shortened, but in that time, he has still been amazing. He has had 31.1 points per game, which is the most of his entire career. He's played, you know, I think 63 games or 65 or something, and he's reliable and consistent. You guys mentioned, you know, he had 46 points in that win against Sacramento on March 13th, and that was after 3 games and 7 days off. And then he had the stretch where he had like 409 points in 11 games between January 23rd and February 14th. So he has played so well and so efficiently with slightly less minutes total this year. And we might have seen like I don't know if this is his peak in athletics. We look at men in basketball and they might play at their peak position, peak form between ages 24 and 29 years old. To me, it was an incredible year. There's a bunch of other stats, too, but the total minutes to me was surprising.
All right, Ben, bring us home. What do you got?
I was going to go a little different route. I was going to say Joe Ingles.
Yes,
he was
that's
a guy
great.
That when the Bucks signed him, I thought it was one of those things that was sounded better on paper. You know, he was an older veteran. He was coming off knee surgery. They didn't know when he was going to be ready. But he seems to fit in seamlessly. He has good chemistry both in the locker room and on the court with Brooke Lopez and Giannis, shooting the ball pretty well. So I was pleasantly surprised by his contributions. It'll be interesting to see him in the playoffs. He's not a guy that's going to challenge Brooke Lopez for Defensive Player of the Year. honors this year, so it'll be interesting to see how teams pick on him a little bit in the playoffs. But pleasant surprise for me, it's just how much he's affected this team.
How about the job John Horst has done? You know, we've kind of danced around it, but kind of bringing in Ingles and stashing him, knowing that he was coming off of ACL injury, that's a really big risk. I mean, he's an older player, veteran player, but really fit what they were doing, and it took some acclimation, but he's been really essential. They acquired Jay Crowder without having to surrender Grayson Allen, which as the season started, I think we all thought that mm-hmm. would be a necessity if they were ever going to get a guy of Jay Crowder's caliber. So they bring him in. You know, they re-sign Bobby Portis before the season. There hasn't been much that's gone wrong. Bringing in Lindell Wigginton, the superstar on the two-way contract, brilliant move. you know, his track record is incredible at this point in his career. He's still very young and has a lot of future ahead of him. And we obviously gave him a lot of credit for when the Bucks won the championship, but he does not miss much. You know, I don't know, with Serge Ibaka, bringing him in, is that the only thing that's really gone wrong on the roster this season? I don't know. It's been crazy. So props to him. I mean, I think if I have a surprise, it's kind of a greater contextual question that we've talked about a lot. I'm surprised Giannis is still not in the MVP conversation, that it's boiled down to two guys and Giannis has put up these numbers and is still just seemingly just not in the top two. You know, people mention him when they talk about it, but I don't know. Seems a little weird to me, but I understand it's the way it goes. John Hollinger took a lot of heat for putting out there that he just felt it was Joel Embiid's time to win an MVP. And I don't know, that was weird to me that people were so on him about that, especially in Bucks Twitter land. So they have a vested interest, but kind of just thinking, I don't know, like it's as good a reason as any when you're trying to parse between three excellent superstar players with crazy numbers and crazy statistics and things that haven't been done in a million years. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that, but I don't know. Maybe Jim, I don't know. Do you as an MVP voter or somebody who's voted for the MVP in the past, is that a problem?
We could go on about this. I don't understand the weird basketball lack of, God, I don't want to use narrative because it's so overdone. Like the weird thought processes that go into basketball voting. Now, I think Ben and Lori, I don't know if either of you vote or have voted, but the reason I want to bring them into this is because I'll say this, and this isn't patting myself on the back. This is just from conversations I've had on press row, in media cafeterias. My background in football has me thinking about NBA voting in a way different way than my current colleagues. And what I mean by that is I hear and I've seen the past comments, can't vote for so-and-so because they haven't won in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Even though it's a regular season award. I've heard what you just said. Well, it's their time. They've earned it. It's about time. Look, Aaron Rodgers would not have won the last two MVPs if NFL voters thought like NBA voters. Well, Aaron Rodgers hasn't won a Super Bowl in 10 years. He can't be MVP. Like what? Like I don't, it's as an NFL, I didn't have the AP vote. But I did vote for PFWA. Like, it's the weirdest thing to me in the NBA, like, award construct that, like, somehow past and future and what they deserve because they were, like, they've been good for so long. Like, that has nothing to do with any of this. And it's just the weirdest thing to me. And I really do think my time in the NFL has shaped my thinking, because the NFL is always about that season.
Yeah,
it's never about, you know, what they've done or not done in the play. Like if that was the case, Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning would have never won any MVPs, because, and Lamar Jackson, right? And it's just a strange thing to me. And I don't know if Lori and Ben have thoughts on that, or if you voted for stuff in the past. It's just a weird NBA dialogue around its awards that is just so strange and foreign to me. I don't quite get it.
Yeah, we're not voting for Homecoming King. I mean, he's Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player on the best team in the regular season in the league. End of story. You just got to look at it sometimes as simple as that. It's black and white.
But I think Giannis might win homecoming king as well.
Oh, he would, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I think it's probably a question of just how basketball, the NBA season works. 82 games is an interesting number in football. The MVP conversation can happen as early as like week 10 or week 11, mm-hmm. but really there's just too little data. You really need almost the entire season. You can't really have an MVP conversation all the way through the season. You know, no one's talking about MVP in early October because they are, but it can't be serious. In baseball, there's so many games. Most of it just gets kind of wrapped up by September 1. You know, with a month to go, you kind of know who's going to be the MVP.
Well, you mentioned baseball. Like, again, let's compare. Like, Mike Trout by NBA voting standards, like, Mike Trout should have never won any of his three MVPs, right?
Sure. Because he has never won a playoff series. He has never won.
It's just such an insane.
Yeah, you never hear voter fatigue when you. You never hear that phrase in any other sport.
That's true.
Well, doesn't the new NBA collective bargaining agreement address some of this, though? I think in the future, you have to play 65 games to be eligible for some of these awards.
So, yes, Lori, that's a good point, because under next year's rules, Giannis would not be eligible for any of this because he's only played 63 games. 20. But I'm not going to hold him to that. I mean, 65 was always sort of my internal number. Like, I feel if you're going to be most valuable, like, that means you have to be available. But yes, Lori, that's a way. It is going to be a minimum 65 games. I'm curious if they lower that threshold for all NBA. We don't have all those details out. There seems to be a lot more leeway with all NBA, like the team construct, as opposed to the individual key awards. But yeah, they're, you know, again, we did not ask for this. We did not ask for our votes to be counted towards like Ja Morant making an extra $40 million next year, or Jaylen Brown making an extra $40 million next year based on these votes. Like, that's, these guys get mad at us, but yet that's their union agreeing to this with the owners, because neither side trusts one another to come to these conclusions fairly and equitably. So they just like throw it in our laps. Yeah, Lori, I think going forward, you know, Giannis would not be eligible of all of the MVP candidates. Like, he would be out of it, and it would be a two horse race because Embiid and Jokic hit the minimum, quote unquote. You know, so we'll see. But to the broader point, yeah, I agree with Lori. Like, you know, best player on the best team, and then you go from there. Even though he played 63 games, so it's, you know, it's just a weird construct. It really is, and we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out in the end.
Yeah, it's definitely that'll be coming up here in the next few weeks. But for now, we must bid adieu. We've been here a long time talking about the Milwaukee Bucks season. They are the top seed. On Sunday, their playoff journey will begin. We have no idea who that will be against, but probably the Heat, Hawks, or Raptors. And we'll find all that out as the week unfolds. Thank you, everyone, for joining me this week on the Point Forward podcast. We will do this again very soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back with you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.